The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus told his disciples a parable about the necessity for them to pray always without becoming weary. He said, "There was a judge in a certain town who neither feared God nor respected any human being. And a widow in that town used to come to him and say, 'Render a just decision for me against my adversary.' For a long time, the judge was unwilling. But eventually, he thought, 'While it is true that I neither fear God nor respect any human being, because this widow keeps bothering me, I shall deliver a just decision for her, lest she finally come and strike me.' The Lord said, 'Pay attention to what the dishonest judge says. Will not God then secure the rights of his chosen ones who call out to him day and night? Will he be slow to answer them? I tell you, he will see to it that justice is done for them speedily. But when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" The Gospel of the Lord. Good, and once again, good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Once again, welcome back, everybody. Jesus says, when the Son of Man returns, will he find any faith on the earth? It's the most haunting question in the New Testament. When the Son of Man returns, will he find any faith on the earth? You know, that's not supposed to be an open question. I mean, Jesus made a divine promise to St. Peter. He said to him, "On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it." You know, so when Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes again at the end of time, does anybody have any faith? You hear that and you think, well, that's not supposed to be a live option. But the worst part about that question is that when Jesus asks it, it's implied that the answer is no. And so you hear this question and you wonder, well, how could Jesus possibly ask a question like this? You want to know how Jesus can ask a question like this? It's because when he wonders whether faith will exist on the earth when he returns, it's because he's not thinking about the church as a generality. He's speaking rather about us as individuals. Listen, as a generality, the church is going to be just fine. It is protected by a divine promise. The gates of the netherworld will not prevail against the church. And it's amazing, you know, generation after generation, there's always somebody who's predicting the end of the church, the end of the church. And we always keep going. We're always there to bury our undertakers. It's funny that, there's no guarantee how big the church is going to be at the end of time. I mean, it might be that we could fit the entire Catholic Church in one living room, but it'll still be there. However, the same guarantee is not made for you and for me as individuals. It's a marvel when you think about it that God has made a creature who's capable of rejecting his creator. You can do that if you want. God will not stand in your way. And that's why all the while we live, in our hearts, we're teetering, tottering on the edge of doing that all the time. Every human heart is a battleground. I guess that's what makes life interesting, you know? There's some bad in the very best of us, and there's some good in the very worst of us. All our lives long, it's like a battle. Between God's will and my will, between what I feel like doing and what I ought to do, between sin and between virtue, between generosity and between selfishness, battlefield. And that's why we heard the first reading we heard from the book of Exodus. It's a story of a battle between Joshua and the Amalekites. Strange reading that first reading was. Did you hear that first reading? Very strange. Down on the ground, at the level of the desert, you got Joshua fighting on behalf of the Israelites. And way up high, on a mountaintop, there's Moses, with his arms extended. Long as Moses got his arms out, Israel's winning the fight. As soon as Moses' arms get tired and he starts to drop them, Israel's losing the fight. Now, you hear that, and you think, what the heck? I bet you a lot of people heard that reading, just tuned it out, said to themselves, incomprehensible Old Testament reading, I give up. You should listen to that reading. There's a lot in it. I'd like to take a closer look at it with you, okay? So the first thing to understand about the first reading from Exodus is that it's part of the story of Exodus. You remember the Exodus story? It's the story of the Israelites who go from slavery in the Promised Land, from slavery in Egypt, to freedom in the Promised Land, and as they go, they have to pass through a desert to get there. And they don't just have to pass through a desert, they have to fight as they're passing through that desert. One of the fights is in the first reading. They come up with this against this group called the Amalekites, and they were a band of nomadic peoples who patrolled the Judean desert, and they were none too pleased that the Israelites were passing through. Now, the Amalekites, they used to pick off the weakest, you know, anybody, maybe somebody elderly lagging behind, maybe a child. Those are the ones they'd attack. Israel had no choice. They had to fight back or they'd be destroyed in the wilderness, right? But the fact is, they had to fight. Now, when you hear anything from Exodus, understand it's one of the best metaphors for our lives that you find anywhere in the Bible, because we're like the Israelites. And you can think of ourselves as wanting to get someplace, right? From slavery to the Promised Land. Of course, the ultimate example of slavery is sin. Jesus says anybody who lives in sin is a slave of sin. And the ultimate example of the Promised Land is the kingdom of heaven. But you know, in a larger sense, it's true for anything. Any place that anything you're trying to achieve. Maybe you're trying to overcome a fault. Maybe you're trying to right or wrong. Maybe you're trying to bring about reconciliation between people. There's a Promised Land. You're trying to get to it. Part of the message of that first reading and of the entire book of Exodus is you can't get there without a fight. You know, it's funny, but when you try to do right in this world, I'm sorry to say, you will be opposed every time. There's no free and clear pass through the desert. You got to fight. You want to know why so many people stay where they are in complacency, in slavery, so to speak? Why don't people fight? Because they realize that it's going to be a struggle, and they don't want to have to fight that struggle. They don't want to pass through the desert. It's kind of it's an interesting little side note. Did you know that the Israelite people never had to fight as long as they were slaves in Egypt? Slaves in Egypt were never conscripted into the Egyptian army. So when the Egyptian army fought, Israelite slaves didn't have to fight. And that's the reason why so many people remain in the complacency that they're in. Because it's easier. If you want to, you can give in to every single temptation that comes along your way. Just cave right in. If you want to, you can always take the easy path. Of course, the price of this is that you're going to live your life as a slave. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to do that. Part of the message of that first reading, you're never going to get to where you want to go if you're not prepared to fight. So it tells the story of that fight. Joshua down on the ground. Moses, he's up on the mountaintop. He's got his arms extended out. Two things that are needed. Any fight done in God's name, anything that's worth achieving in this world, two things are needed. Prayer and effort. Joshua represents effort, right? He's the one down on the ground actually fighting the fight. Moses represents prayer. He's the one up on the mountaintop praying the prayers. Both are necessary. You can't get any good thing accomplished in this world by praying, but not by getting out there trying and putting forth effort. You might have heard the story of the man who was caught in the flood. Kind of a joke, kind of an anecdote. It's been told many times, but just in case you haven't heard it before, I'll tell you, okay? So there's a man, he's caught in the flood, he's on his rooftop, and he prays to God. He says, God, save me from the flood. So a boat comes by. Hop in the boat. Man says, no thanks, God will save me. Water rises higher. God, save me from the flood. So a motorboat comes by. Hop in the boat. Man says, no thanks, I know God will save me. Water rises higher, he's up to the chimney. Helicopter flies by, rope dangling down from the bottom. Grab the rope. Man says, no thanks, God will save me. The man, of course, he drowns in the flood. He stands before God and he says, why didn't you save me? God says, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. What more could you ask for? Right? Of course you have to actually do work. Prayer alone is not enough. But between prayer and your own effort, which of those two is more important? The counterintuitive answer is that prayer is more important. Counterintuitive. It's very hard for us to hear as Westerners, very hard for us to hear as Americans, moderns, practical people. But one of the things that's emphasized in that first reading, if Moses isn't praying, Joshua's not winning. No matter how talented, no matter how skilled, no matter how hard he tries, without Moses' arms raised in prayer, Joshua's losing the fight. Reminds me of something St. Therese, our patroness, once said. She said, "My whole strength lies in prayer and sacrifice. These are my invincible arms. They can move hearts far better than words. I know it by experience." But here's what I really want to emphasize for you here today. It's how to fight. It's how to fight. So you got Moses up there praying with his arms extended. They win the battle. Do you know anybody else anywhere in all the Bible who won a great battle by having his arms extended? Sound familiar? Who won a great battle by having his arms extended? It's Christ on the cross. Moses in the Old Testament is an image of Christ on the cross, who wins the ultimate victory over evil, good over evil, truth over falsehood, life over death, with his arms extended. And the message to you is that whenever you want to do God's work in this world, as long as you fight the way Jesus fought on the cross, you'll never lose. But it's very hard to do. There is such a strong temptation to want to fight dirty. I was speaking with an exorcist once, fascinating conversation. He told me two things about the devil that I learned in a conversation with an exorcist. Number one, everything he says is a lie. He says the evil spirit speaks in the exorcism, and everything he says is a lie. He lies, and he lies, and he lies. And it reminds me what Jesus said of the evil spirit. He was a liar and a murderer from the beginning, and lying is his native speech. Second thing he said is the devil always fights dirty. And by fighting dirty, I mean he fights with accusation, intimidation, fear, threats, and sometimes violence. When you're fighting on God's side, it is so tempting to want to fight with the devil's weapons, but you can't do it. It's so hard. And what? You always want to get even, right? I remember once I was hearing this great big conversation. One person said, things got real heated, real elevated, real pitched. One person said to the other, "Two wrongs might not make a right, but it darn sure makes it even." A lot of times we feel like that, right? And it's so hard to fight with the weapons of the cross, so to speak, with patience, with forgiveness, with humility, with perseverance. My goodness, the temptation is strong to fight with the devil's weapons. Don't ever give in to the temptation to fight dirty. As soon as you do, you surrender the fight. You might win a personal point of pride for yourself, but the greater good that you're trying to achieve, it's going to be lost. It's going to be lost. It reminds me, actually, of an image that I once heard. It's an image of the power of water. The power of water. Water, the most destructive force in the entire world. Nothing wreaks more havoc, does more damage than the power of water. But when you think about water, it's very humble, it's very gentle, and it's very persevering. Water, notice, it always takes the lowest place, doesn't it? Rushes to the lowest available place. And it's very gentle. Water hits against the rock and hits against the rock and hits against the rock in the sea. And it looks like the rock wins the battle every time, doesn't it? But water's very persevering. It never gives up. Crushes mighty boulders into fine dust. That's an image of what it means to fight with the weapons of the cross. And never fear when you do so. No suffering is wasted. No prayer is unheard, and God does not lose battles. I love what we said in our psalm response today. Did you listen to the psalm response? It said, "My help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth." When you're discouraged, when you face trials and tribulations, when you want to quit, when sufferings are too great, when you want to give up, I think you've forgotten the message of the psalm response. My help is in the name of the Lord, the guy who made heaven and earth. Remember that. Yes, it might require you suffering, and it'll definitely require your perseverance, like we heard in the gospel today. But God does not lose battles. Not those who fight in his name. Not those who fight and persevere by the power of the Holy Spirit. Christ our Lord told us to persevere right here in the Gospels. He knows how strong is the temptation to quit, how powerful evil seems, and how weak good seems, and how easy it is to want to throw in the towel. And he urges us to pray, persevere, and never lose heart. Because he says, when the Son of Man comes, will he find any faith on the earth? That question remains unanswered, because the answer depends on you.